This episode, The Rise of the McMansion, an analysis of how much bigger homes have gotten. I came across an interesting article in Business Insider magazine, and it basically was talking about the rise of the McMansion. So we thought we would go over some of the key points in this particular article and give our take on it for both the importance of this to the homeowner and to the handyman as well. Welcome to the Handyman Pros Radio Show, home improvement and maintenance tips from the pros. Thanks for listening to another edition of the Handyman Pros Radio Show, where our goal is to help save you time, money, and aggravation on your home maintenance and repair. This edition's entitled The Rise of the McMansion, an analysis of how much bigger homes have gotten. And to help me explain, I am here with the McMansion living dude, Mr. John. Johnny, what's going on?
Oh, just enjoying my McMansion.
That's right. That's right. Can I get fries with that?
Can I get fries with that? The closest thing I'm going to get to a McMansion is a McNugget. So, you know.
A McHappy Meal.
Yeah. Happy Meal. Right. 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 Where's my toy? So,
Anyways.
Larry,
any good stories this week, Johnny?
No, not really. I'm going to do some cabinet work tomorrow. How's that?
Oh, fun. Something different.
Fixing cabinets.
Yeah, well, that's still something different.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, little different set of skills there. Is this for you or is this for a client?
No, it's a client.
Just for a client. Yeah, cool.
So anyways, this is an interesting article. When you and I were discussing this, it says that, okay, this is from Business Insider.
Yep.
Right.
Give credit where credit's due, and then I'm going to jump in.
Noah Scheidlauer, and this is published on the 7th, November 7th of 2023, right?
November 27th. Yep. All right. But before we get started.
There you go.
Folks, please remember to hit the like and subscribe button. We are trying to spread the word about the Handyman Pros Radio Show. And to do that, we are working the algorithms. They are challenging, to say the least. And anyway, hitting like and subscribe tells the algorithms what people are listening to and what they like. And so if you would, please do that with
and
that.
Give us a five-star review.
Hit that five-star review. Yeah, do that as well. We would really appreciate it. We really, really appreciate that. We're trying to get you good content.
So. Well, Larry, this was a good find at the article's entitled The Rise of the McMansion. Although when we were talking about this, we were a little confused that they used McMansion versus then they kind of got blurred into, I think, a
median home size.
All the homes. It seemed like to me.
We're going to go through these slides, folks, just so you understand this, that you'll understand what we're saying once we get into this. But
I'd like to say, Larry, is that, you know, what this thing is going to do is what's it mean to you as a homeowner and what this means to you, the handyman out there.
Right.
Because that's something we want to bring up as well. Because, you know, we can talk about this stuff, but if there's no big takeaway on it, then, you know, if it doesn't benefit you, then, you know, what are we talking about here? Other than it's kind of interesting, but, you know, we'll kind of go through this a little bit.
But John, they get to listen to you and I tell our corny jokes and all that kind of stuff and give our great, you know,
you lucky
whatever.
People,
you poor souls. That's all I can
so,
say.
Anyways. All right, Larry. They've got a number of charts in here and the charts we can put the story behind these charts.
Right.
So let's go ahead and push up the first one. Larry,
John,
check it out. More bedrooms.
Now, big surprise. This is talking about how much bigger homes have gotten. And they used a reference point of the 1970s, just so you have a point for y'all to understand. And again, we'll post this article if you want to read the actual article, but we're pretty much going to touch on most of the points anyway. Yeah. But yes, it's certainly looking like, according to this chart, that the number of bedrooms has been increasing since the 70s, which actually makes some sense. So it's not some of this stuff is, I don't know if I want to say it's surprising, but I think there's reasons behind a lot of it. And anyway, so we'll just go that. We're going to put a synopsis together about some of our concepts of why these things are happening the way they're happening. I think it's interesting here to note that two-bedroom homes are basically been very level through that period of time. And two-bedroom homes are generally considered I guess you'd call them smaller homes, but very, very consistent. Three bedrooms has been the one that's been squeezed a little bit by adding the fourth bedroom. So homes seem to be getting a little bit bigger, more bedrooms, obviously.
Yeah, and I think things are getting a little bit more expensive, too.
Yeah, well,
And that's what they're kind of talking about in the article.
Right.
On Goldman Sachs expects the home prices to remain elevated.
Yep.
Amid record unaffordability levels. So what we have going on right now is we've got these obscene interest rates. And well, we've got people
relative, but keep going.
And well, they're you know, and they're at 8%. Nobody can afford. It just really puts a damper on your first time buyers.
It does.
And nobody can move because, you know, if you move from one house to another house, you're going to be pulling a mortgage. Nobody wants to do that. So everybody's sitting on all this inventory.
Yep.
And it's kind of a mess. Anyway.
So that's it. So we're seeing bedrooms go up. What's the next one, John? Here's another big surprise here. Look at this. Bathrooms are going up as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is referenced from the 1990 to 2020.
Yes.
And you'll see the bathrooms are, you know, three or more. So let's talk about what this means, right? Let's pull out the nugget here. So for the handyman out there, you know your bathrooms, know how to fix them, know how to work on them. And as homeowners, you know, you got more things to keep your eye on. And I'll tell you, a lot of problems come out of bathrooms, right? You got shower leaks, you got new faucets, you've got leaking toilets, you've got gas leaking faucets, you know, the whole thing.
You've got a bunch more in parts. It's one thing that
there's a lot more moving parts now.
A lot more moving parts, yeah, compared to bedrooms, for example.
Yeah.
So, you know, in a bedroom, basically all you're really worrying about are things like windows and shades,
right?
And
cleaning out the bugs,
yeah, and maybe some electric, right? So, yeah, cleaning in general,
yeah,
right?
Cleaning.
Bigger the house, the more cleaning you have to do. But in a bathroom, as you know, or if you don't know this, but it's pretty simple, there's a lot more more complex appliances. So you have sinks and you have faucets and you have supply side water and drain side water.
Yep.
You have usually a lot of tile, and maybe or maybe not, but you have some kind of tile generally or some kind of waterproof material. That's a true statement. It is waterproof material. You do have that funny thing called a toilet, which has a bunch of internal moving parts in it as well. And all of these things involve water. And as we've said so many times in this show, water is your biggest danger to your home. It's the most destructive item for almost everybody's home of all the things to worry about. So adding bathrooms does add a level of complexity to your home. Doesn't mean it's bad. It's just more to keep your eyes on. And again, John said it from the handyman side. It's more know your bathrooms, know what you need, you know how to fix toilets, know how to fix faucets, know how to fix plumbing leaks, know how to fix, you know, both supply and drain side plumbing leaks. So there's some significance here. It's important.
Yeah. That and this is one of the big nuggets I took out of there for our business.
Right.
And for the homeowner. I mean, we try to bring to light all these things where you need to keep your eye on things. And this certainly is one of them. And I'll tell you what, I chased my issues in a round robin in my house.
Right. Cuz
I've got three bathrooms or whatever, and you know, I'm bouncing around to each one every once in a while, you know. Something's up.
Tell the story about your toilet, right? So your toilet, I know we've probably told it before on one of the other shows.
Well, yeah, you know, this is a good one. So I just did this for my neighbor too, and he ran into the same thing. A big water bill, didn't know where it was coming from.
Yep.
And I experienced the same thing. And it was like a silent killer thing. It was like, I mean, this thing was leaking and I couldn't even hear it.
Yeah.
But
right,
I knew,
right.
You know, it really had to concentrate on this thing and it was leaking to watch it.
And
I fixed
it. What was actually leaking?
It was the flapper valve.
The flapper valve. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, just we've talked about this ad nauseum, but you know how to fix all these things, but you know, keep an eye on this. Now, if you have, let's say you have, let's go back here onto the number of bathrooms, three or more, and you're not using some of them,
they tend to get forgotten.
And that's my point.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait a minute, why is my water bill going up? and you might not even hear your toilet regenerate, you know,
right.
get dropped right. down. That's right. what happened to me. I was surprised because usually when it leaks a lot, you know,
you hear it.
You can, yeah, you'll hear it refill.
Or you see it. Or you can see it.
Mine? Nope. So anyways, folks, that's one of the nuggets that, you know, one of the takeaways here that comes out.
It does bring up another thing too. Mm-hmm. So I just want to mention this. We have mentioned this. I think we've done a show on pressure relief valves, but folks, your house has a thing called a pressure relief valve. And I'm going to make the relevance to the bathrooms. You'll understand this in about a minute. Pressure relief valve takes the street pressure of the water from say about 100 pounds per square inch and knocks it down to whatever you set it at, but it should be set between 45 and 60 PSI. You don't want it any higher than 60 PSI. Here's the significance of that. If your pressure relief valve goes, it can damage all of the valves in your faucets and toilets. And toilets are very the ones that get hit most often because they use a lot of plastic parts in toilets today for the inlet valves. And so those inlet valves are not as robust as a sink. I'm just going to cut to the chase. They're not as robust. And so if you get a spike over 60 PSI, there's a good chance you're going to blow those valves out. All of a sudden, all four of your toilets are running and you don't understand why. It's an indication of a different issue. So just be aware of that. I just mention it because I've lived that life. I went into somebody's house and they're like, well, they said, well, my toilet's leaking. And I just did a courtesy check on the other ones while I was at it. And I'm like, you have all your toilets leaking. Then I did a pressure test on their water and they were running 130 PSI at their sinks. And that's way, 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 way too high. So it was the PRV valve that needed to be replaced. So a different issue. But anyway, just understand that that's an indicator of a different issue. It's a root cause problem.
All right. Number of floors.
Number of floors. Yeah, this one hasn't changed a whole lot. So basically the vast majority of homes, again, so John, let's go into this thing. These are median figures that we're looking at here. So all of the things in these charts are based on median. Median is 50% is bigger, 50% is smaller. It's not average. It's 50% is 50% is smaller. So we kind of laughed because I personally don't consider, you'll see when we get to square footage that these doesn't mean your houses are quote McMansions, that they're huge, that they're these big houses. This is just housing in general. So this particular one, not a big surprise. Homes are basically one and two stories, and then there's three stories or more comprise a very, very small percentage over the top.
Yeah,
of that.
So one of the things that they mentioned in the article on this is that, you know, there's been a lot of one-story homes being built. Now, I will say that there's reasons for that too, right? As people get older, you know, you don't want to climb stairs and so on and so forth. You know, ranch-style homes are kind of back in. And the affordability of big homes is kind of tough right now. So that's why it's kind of remained constant like that.
There's more to it, John. Have you ever lived in a more than two story home?
Yeah.
Honestly, I did too. One of my very first homes was a condo, and it happened to have three stories.
I don't care for it. To be honest,
no, man, it's a lot of up and down the freaking stairs.
So you'll see a lot of you'll see a lot if you live in a townhouse. A lot of the townhomes are cubic. They go straight up. You park underneath, you got to get out, you got to run up to the first floor, then the next floor, then the next floor.
Exactly. That's exactly what I had.
Yes.
And I'll tell you what, I was young, I was in my 20s, and I'm like,
It gets old.
So I think that's the other side, is that there aren't as many three-story buildings because people's preference is just either ranch or two-story. You know, two-story is not so bad.
Yeah. And when we talk about that, I mean, you know, basements aside, we'll talk about that in a second. But this chart here.
Yeah, this is the median square footage. Right?
Yeah, so square footage has really gone up since 75, right?
Since 75, it's about a third bigger, right? So in 75, it's showing around 1.6 or 1,600 square feet. And now we're at like 2,400 square feet. So that's an additional 800 square, what's my math? Wait, 16, so stuff four plus another four. So it's 800 square feet bigger, roughly, in terms. And that's about a third of the total size. It's 800 and 800 is 16. Add another 800, you're at 2,400.
So, yeah, just fudging this chart. I mean, what we're looking at here is probably somewhere around the 2,300 square or 2,400 square feet.
Yeah,
is about the median right now versus yep. what it not that long ago was maybe, you know, down here at 2,000. So we're at, I mean, this kind of bigger
telling.
Homes, man.
It's telling. I think one of the interesting things right now, because we're in this highly inflationary period, is if you look at the chart in 1980, right? And John, you and I are old enough to remember this. There's a huge dip in the size of the homes. And the actual reason for that, I think the reason for that is I remember those days, John.
Yeah.
I know you do too. This is 1982. It was January 1st. The average size was 1,520 square feet. Home interest rates at that time, because I remember I was graduating high school, they were in the 16% range, 18% range. I know people that paid 18% on a home mortgage in those years. And folks, if you think that doesn't affect how much home you can afford, you need to learn math.
You can take away from it right now what it means from
well,
where we were at 3%, at 3%, now we're at 8%. And when you do the math, you probably added, you know, $1,000 a month at least to a mortgage regular
home. It's a bunch. And what that equates to is you can afford a smaller home. That's what it equates to.
Right. And I see, see the dip there in 1980, you know, it just dropped down. But then
you see the same thing coming out. Look at the past few years. Look at the end of the chart, you know, and you see the same kind of thing.
Yeah, right here.
Yeah, right. And that's all based on, I believe that's just based on math. You know, it's based on the amount of home that you can afford.
Yep.
So just, it matters. What is the significance to you as a homeowner? Well, it's how much you can afford. As a handyman, well, same thing. If the houses are smaller, there's not quite as much business, but there's still
more
business.
And they're big, though. They're bigger than they were.
Once
again, more complexity, more things to take care of, right?
Yeah, more maintenance. Basically, the bigger the home, the more maintenance. It's that simple. End of story. This is garages and carports. Here, this is, if you look at it, this is pretty level. You know, either no car or you know, up what the two car garages comprise most of the building that goes on. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. One thing you and I speculated on is how much bigger garages are today than they used to be. And I know if I'm building a house, I'm going to build a pretty good sized garage. It's going to be deep. I had a home that was built in the 90s. And I mean, you pulled the car in and you basically touched the bumper to the front wall and the garage could just barely
my first house, we had a one car garage.
Ugh.
And you can barely get out of the car when you put it in especially a 1957 or 56 Chevy. Believe me, I can't tell you how many pictures I have of that car sitting outside.
Yeah, of course, because you couldn't even get it
you couldn't even get it in.
And for whatever reason, they did that in the 90s too, you know, and it was part of the building style. And I'm like, oh my God, this is awful. So if I'm building a garage today, I'm going to make it, it's going to be longer than the cars. It's going to be big because I want that space to be able to use. I like my shop. I'm not going to lie.
Right,
I don't have one right now. And it's one thing I truly miss.
And one of the things that I find around here is that there's a lot of three car garages.
Yep.
And once again, this we've said it before, but it adds more complexity, even though it's a garage. But you got garage doors, you got openers, you got more lighting, you have bicycle racks in there, you've got shop, you got all kinds of things that people will ask for in that garage. Shelves, cabinets. So for you, handymen out there, that's some business. And for you homeowners,
Customizing garages is a big thing. It's a good segment of your business. I've hung a bunch of racks for people and a whole bunch of that kind of stuff. And just another aside too, the single largest moving part in any home is usually the garage door. That's it. It's the biggest moving part. So if you, AKA meaning it's also the biggest thing that's going to fail,
right.
Cause it's a big piece of equipment. So
yeah, anyway. not to mention garage floors, right? Which we are there personally to see.
You want to get customized. We have a good friend, a good client. He's a friend and a client, but I mean, he did his garage door, dude. It was something else, man.
Yeah.
It's epoxy coated.
That was the Mac Daddy. Okay, so
yep. So anyway,
All right. Air conditioning. No surprise here.
Yeah, this one is no surprise. I personally think this is due for a couple of different reasons, but I have this because the actual cost of air conditioning units is actually adjusted for inflation, I believe, has come down. And, you know, and today homes are built with central air just as part of the design structure.
Yeah.
Whereas the home I grew up in was built in 1812. It was added on to in 1953, right? So
did they have electricity back then?
No, there was no. It was
exactly
fireplaces,
so, you know,
and all that stuff. So it's been updated over the. Well, I shouldn't say it's been updated that much. I mean, still had horsehair plaster and wood lath, for the walls in the main section of the house. But in the addition of the house. And this was in upstate New York, so it was cold. We didn't have air conditioning. If we needed air conditioning, it was only about 2 weeks of the year that we needed it anyway. And my dad was not going to spend the money to do it. And I don't blame him because
Well, we all had window shakers back in the day. And, you know, from an aesthetic purposes that, you know, window shakers or window units, let's whatever you want to call them, don't look that great. You know, so central air. This chart does not surprise
me. No, it's not a surprise at all. It's really not a surprise at all.
Let's talk about the heating systems.
Yeah, heating systems are it really hasn't changed much. Still, the vast majority is forced hot air, right? And then comes heat pumps. And we know this. There are some limitations, folks, on heat pumps. And if you're not aware of it, I don't know if we've done a show on it, but there's just some limitations. Heat pumps work great in warmer climates. They don't work so great in cold climates. Where John and I both grew up, it got really cold. John colder. He grew up in Chicago. Yeah. It's much, much colder than Rochester. Same latitude, but just Midwest, much colder, but still really cold. Nobody used a heat pump in and around where I grew up because you'd freeze to death. So if you live in the northern climates, you're going to be using forced hot air. It just is what it is. So, you know, electric's good.
But this doesn't surprise me though, this here, which is the rise of the heat pump. Cause you know, all of the new HVAC systems, you know, offer heat
well,
pumps,
part
right?
of it is so, to correlate it to the other slide. Air conditioners to change over to a heat pump is a reversing valve.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So that doesn't really surprise me.
But what it's really taken away from are some of these other forms of heat that, you know, you just don't see anymore, like steam heat or, you know,
hot water heat
or other, you know, the other types of things, aka they're talking about things like firewood and stuff like that. Nobody, I mean, you can heat your house with it, but
oil.
We get into actual furnaces or fuels is the next one.
Yeah.
And so, again, correlating along with this, you know, natural gas is number one. Electricity is number two. Oil is number three. And that's really largely a Northeastern thing. I had a home. I had a home here, too, that had oil, but it was an older home. It was built in the 70s. And it ran on oil, which is kind of interesting because it's not common here, but very common in upstate New York. And very common when I lived in Boston, it was very common. I'm sure it was common in Chicago as well.
Yeah.
For you.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So just it's just these things are correlating. You know, I think you see correlation in them. So all three of those things are related. That's all HVAC systems. And not really not a huge amount of change, just some refinements on those things, I think.
And speaking of heating, the number of fireplaces.
Yeah, this was one we found interesting. The number of fireplaces is actually declining. And I think, Johnny, let's pop into this one. We believe that some of this stuff is caused because a lot of people have been moving south. And so when you move into a warmer climate and you have to make a financial choice, and here in Atlanta, yes, I have a fireplace in my home, and you do too, John. But do you, how much?
Yeah, I got
you've
two
got
of them.
Two of them. I've only got one, but gosh, I probably burn a fire three or four times a year unless it's really, really cold. And then it's mostly for aesthetics. It's just the fact of, you know, it's nice to have a fireplace, or if the power goes out, it is nice to have a fireplace.
Yeah. Well, we had mentioned that, right. We were talking about that, before is that, you know, you live up north and fireplaces, it could be life and death.
It can be life and death. Yeah.
In a big winter storm and something falls over the, you know, your power lines, yeah, you're screwed.
You need some heat, you know.
Yeah, and there's no fan to blow the heat around.
Right, and and I think those factors play. One of the other things that we postulate on this. So we live outside Atlanta, Georgia, and I know here there are not very many old homes, right? So, and when I refer to old homes, I'm referring to pre-1970 homes. You know, there's a few, and you get into the urban areas and the really.
Yeah, this is we live in kind of a younger town, if you will, from that perspective. Yes. But I think I think that probably people moving south is probably a cause of this. Just looking at the where this graph starts to make its turn right here at the 2015-2020 point right here, and it going up. So that's kind of what that's kind of my takeaway.
And these things correlate, but through all of the, if you look at all of the statistics, they correlate. And part of the reason that I mentioned where we live in, that we live in a new town, is if you come here into Atlanta, it's tough to buy, it's tough to buy an older home. You can build one for about what you can buy an older home for. I mean, you literally can build brand new. And if you're going to build brand new, then you're looking at it with today's eyes instead of, eyes from 50 or 100 or 200 years ago. So a fireplace is kind of, maybe I won't put a fireplace in because it's a cost item, and maybe, and I don't think I'm going to use it that much. So that's just kind of my thoughts on this. I'm not 100% sure. We don't have data.
Yeah, but if you don't have a fireplace, Larry, where are you hanging your big screen television? Okay, so
lots of places, anywhere. Where do you want it?
But all these people have to put them. Everybody's putting them above their fireplace.
Well, true.
So, okay, so let's move on and talk about wall material. Exterior.
Definitely a trend towards low maintenance exteriors, right? Probably the highest maintenance one I see there is wood, and it is definitely declined. People are not using wood siding much at all anymore. Brick has stayed pretty constant over the years, right? And it's an outstanding exterior cover. Stucco looks like it's grown a little bit, but I think kind of it's sort of stayed relatively in stasis to me,
So we had an event in the stucco business. Right. At one point they came out with something new, if I remember right.
Synthetic stucco.
It was pretty nasty.
Didn't work too well.
What I take away from this is I'm not going with the McMansion as much on this one. Once again, I think this is more the median. Just the median home, just in general. But the rise of what you just said was low maintenance, like vinyl siding. I don't see any vinyl siding on any big homes, but I do see, the hardy plank, the fiber cement stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
Hardy plank is pervasive.
Great planks, great stuff. And then the other thing I take away from this is that there's probably a rise of using all that because, it takes some talent to lay brick.
It does.
And it's a lot slower, where you can really put up a lot of siding quickly compared to bricking a house.
It's definitely much less expensive. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. It is a more economical with a I don't want to say a superior result, but boy, it's probably just as good. So, fiber siding, fiber cement, as they call it, is really a really great product.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, really a great product.
Well, there's so much new technology that we always talk about. I mean, you have house wraps now. You have all kinds of things that never existed before. Right. There's all kinds of ways, that the technology has changed. Anyways,
so the significance of this to you as a homeowner is you're striving to have low maintenance, right? Obviously, because I know I am. I hate working on the outside of my house if I don't have to. But as the handyman, you need to learn how to do cement fiber siding repairs and things like that. It's going to be critical that you know how to do that.
And we'll talk about doing an episode on that, because it's relatively, if you haven't worked with it, there's just a couple of different tools that you need. But other than that, it's easy to work with. Just be careful about breathing that stuff in. I do notice, boy, that the wood had really just dropped off. I mean, what a pain.
Well, it's a combination of a lot of different things. Yeah. It's higher maintenance. Yeah. Now you still have to paint cement fiber, so the painting issue isn't an issue, but you definitely have to paint wood. But wood's also really expensive. I mean, let's just cut to the chase.
Yeah, wood's expensive, and you really got to keep your eyes on it.
And it's not the low-maintenance option. And as you know, fiber siding, I use hardy plank as kind of a generic term, but it looks just like wood, at least lap siding.
Exactly.
Looks exactly the same. Exactly. So why not go for the low-maintenance side? You know, that's my take on it, so...
Let's talk about the foundations.
Yeah, found.
And this is baseless.
Yeah, foundations haven't changed much. One thing that this is where we also think that people were moving south. So in the north, because of frost lines, which you might know or you might not know if you live there, you know this, but you have to build below the frost line or else the house is going to heave. Here in the south, we don't have that issue because we don't get enough hard freezes to move a slab, basically. So there's a lot of homes built on slabs here and or crawl spaces built on foundation piers. And that's how we build here in the south. But up north, everything's on a basement because it has to be below that frost line. And if you look, what we see here is a rise in the number of slab builds versus basement builds. Now, they do build basements here in the greater Atlanta area, but usually it's to be into a hillside, so because of just the topography of where you're building. But nobody in South Georgia builds on a basement, or in Florida, or very few in Florida build on a basement. It's just too expensive. You know, you're digging a hole in the ground, and then you got to side it up, and then you got to make it waterproof. And that's a very different thing than where you have to do that, like in a truly cold climate, because you can't get that frost heat. So,
yeah, and I think it's just that was my takeaway from this chart was just more. I think this is a migratory thing. It looks like people are moving south. And more slabs. Texas, it's all on slab on grade or whatever, right?
Slab or piers. You know, they put them on piers. They'll give you a crawl space. Really common, you know. And they build a few basements there. You know, just mostly, again, if it's into a hillside, they do. But you're not really going to dig you're just not digging a hole in the ground and putting stuff around it.
Yeah.
So that's the article. We will post a link out to the article. Some pretty interesting stuff. You know, just basically the houses are getting bigger. You're going to have more maintenance issues as a homeowner. You're going to have more opportunity as a handyman and we did point out a few things that you just basically kind of need to know, like if you're going to be a handyman or even as a homeowner.
And you just brought up another point is that earlier was that, as painting companies out there, you have more opportunity.
Sure.
Bigger homes, they're and the siding, you know.
Well, and roofing and the whole deal. The bigger the home,
all folks, of it.
Home expenses rise in an exponential curve. They don't rise. It's not linear. Because your house is 2,000 square feet versus 1,000 square feet doesn't mean it's twice as expensive to maintain. It's actually probably four times as much to maintain, maybe three. Yeah. It's a curve, and it's based on a whole lot of things. But the more square footage that you have, the more heating, the more maintenance issues, the more, you know, it's just everything compounds. The more taxes you pay, the more everything. So,
yeah.
Right. And we're not, we don't want to get into a long political discussion. Most of you probably wouldn't want to hear it anyway. Or if you did, we'd probably, I don't know, whatever, maybe someday, right? Maybe someday. But from our take on this sort of thing, the bigger the home gets, the more opportunity there is as far as a homeowner goes. And also the more expense goes on the homeowner side, there's more expense involved. Actually meant on the handyman side, there's more opportunity, and on the homeowner side, there's more expense. But it's just some things to be aware of. And trends are important, particularly if you're going to sell your house. So my mother and father-in-law live in a 70s model. It was built in 1972 home. And I have to tell you, the bathrooms in that place, they're like a shoebox closet. They're awful. And I now know why we build bigger bathrooms, because, it's terrible.
There's been a big change in the housing market. There's no doubt. So Larry, anything else?
I don't think so, John. Is the spaceship landed? Are we taking that bad boy apart yet?
I don't know. We're putting siding on it, though.
Fiber siding on it, baby.
Here it comes with
all right, folks. Well,
with the hardy plank.
That signifies the end of the Handyman Pros Radio Show. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please send us an email, questions@handymanprosradioshow.com. We do, we respond to most of the emails. I do owe somebody a couple of checklists out there. But anyway, be that as it may, somebody wanted the whole list on the length of property, how long your stuff home lasts, and I will send that to you. I'm just I've been lax in my duties. But we're always looking for content too. If you have a show you want to hear, please don't hesitate to reach out to us or drop us a line through our Facebook page. That's at Handyman Pros. We've got a good, very active group out there. Johnny and I are posting stuff all the time, but we're getting a lot of good stuff from some of our members as well. So all of those are ways to get a hold of us. Smoke signals work. You know, John's always, he's pretty good at responding to those. So, all right. And with that, Johnny, what else we got?
That's it, folks. I hope you have a great week. Larry, get back to work, and we'll all see you next week on the Handyman Pros Radio Show.